Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Studio Canal Presents podcast. My name is Simon Brew from Film Stories magazine, and this is a regular podcast celebrating one of the biggest and deepest film libraries in the world. Studio Canal's extensive library of over 6,000 films brings together cinema from around the globe, from Pan's Labyrinth to Delicatessen, Four Lions to Persepolis, and we're going to be doing our very best to explore it all in this podcast. Over the series so far, we've been everywhere from 1960s Paris for a look back at the French New Wave, to 1940s Vienna to explore The Third Man, and late 21st century Mars for a celebration of Total Recall. And this time around, we're jumping aboard an express train in South Korea to revisit a film released in 2016 that's already become a modern classic, director Yong Sang-ho's action horror Train to Busan. And we're going to get straight into it. Joining me to discuss Train to Busan is Korean cinema expert and reader in film studies at King's College London, Dr. Jin-hee Choi. Jin-hee, welcome to the Studio Canal Presents podcast.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, your price for coming on the podcast is we always ask our guests to give us a little film fact. You've just tipped us off on this, that we can name any decade at all and you can give us a favourite film.
Yes, I can.
Okay, so 1980s. Let's do an easy one first.
It's 1985, like Hou Hsiao-hsien's film, A Time to Live, Time to Die.
Okay,
1930s. Gay Divorce Sai, a Fran Astaire musical, I think.
1990s.
1990s. It's Days of Being Wild, directed by Wong Kar-wai.
Let's go right back, 1920s.
I would say Man with a Movie Camera. I think
that's okay.
It's very hard to select one, but I think some are associated with kind of either I wrote about or studied or when I saw when I was on, was in high school. So kind of different reason.
Is it a static list? If we were doing this in 10 years' time, we'd be a completely different collection of films from the decades.
No, I'm going to stick with them.
I don't blame you.
But I have to pick 2010s.
Okay, so when we cut, this is episode 14. So by the time we get to what, about episode 70 or so, we'll bring you back and we'll fill in the gaps.
Yes, of course.
Excellent. Well, the film that we're here to talk about is 2016's Train to Busan. Love this film. Can you just set it up a bit for us? Who or what is Train to Busan and how did it come to be?
I mean, to my knowledge, I think this is the first Korean zombie film and it was a huge box office success. The director worked on animation first and then this is his kind of feature debut and he's very active at the moment. Like he's making like series for Netflix and another film and such. And so it was unexpected. I think zombie was not the kind. I mean, there are horror films, but not zombie. And after that, a lot of like films about zombies or television series like Netflix and such. And so I think he set up the trend of zombie in South Korean cinema. It's interesting in many ways because it registers some of the spatial history of South Korea. So the station is very important. And it's heading towards Busan is also very significant. And some of the kind of visual motifs, I think, quite interesting as well to kind of register. It's a really kind of fun as a commercial zombie films, but I think there's a little bit more depth to it. That's quite interesting in many ways.
So what are those significances that you've just talked about there?
So the film starts from the protagonist's home, Seogu, and Seogu in the office, and then some pre-credit sequence or whatever. But the main station, Seoul Station, was newly built, I think, for the fast train. So Train to Busan, the train that you see in the film, it's a set, but it's kind of fast kind of rail that just began, I think, 2004. That kind of architecture, that newly built station, demarcates a little bit about Korean history. So the old station, Seoul Station, is right next to it still.
Yeah.
And the building was built in 1920s during the colonial era. So South Korea was a colony of Japan for 35 years, from 1910 until 45, until the end of World War II. And so that kind of shift to a new station. And then it's also kind of faster train than the regular train. I think it's quite significant in terms of the kind of modernity and history and such. And also the kind of the direction from Seoul to Busan, I think that's also very significant. That trajectory also kind of resembles a little bit of Korean War as well, because Korean War broke in 1950, and when the North came down, Seoul was occupied quite quickly, and a lot of people had to escape the city, and many moved down to South, especially Busan. So that trajectory is also there. And so I think there's a little bit of colonial history there in terms of architecture, and then also the Korean history in terms of Korean War. And so I think it's interesting to kind of tease out some of the spatial connotations in the film.
And you mentioned that it's effectively a first-time director as well, Yeon Sang-ho. Mm-hmm. He also strikes me as someone who solves his problems before he gets to the set. Because one of the things I really love about Train to Busan is the puzzle solving in the film itself. I've got a real bugbear about films that introduce an object and then, like, a scene later, that's the object that's required to solve whatever problem we're faced with. It just feels so organic in this film. I'm thinking particularly, I'm going to spoil alert, the use of water and newspaper to plaster up a window just to buy them a little bit of safety. But it's just like that sense, really, that someone's put in a shift before they've got to the set.
I don't know, maybe because his background as a cartoonist, animator, maybe he's very meticulous in terms of storyboard. So it's not like, you know, some directors who are more spontaneous, like actors improvise, but I think he may be a lot more kind of structured in terms of shooting and such. And so a lot of motifs, I think even baseball bat.
Yes.
Obvious, but, you know, like, why like baseball team? I think it's kind of vignettes of different characters, right? So there's a like single father and daughter and an elderly lady's baseball team and a couple and such. But like baseball bat is very important. Even the homeless person, I think he's an important character. He's the one who kind of snuck into the train at the last minute, and he's one of the last survivor. And so he seems to be insignificant in the beginning, but he plays quite a bit of role as well. And the female character, the one who turns into a zombie first on the train, she's a very famous actress. And so she just makes a kind of brief appearance, but then like...
just to turn her into a zombie at speed.
And then that's it. And then we don't see her rest of the film. And so, I guess it's kind of very well-structured and meticulous in terms of giving little bits of cues in the beginning, and it's taken up later on. And visual motif likes, like, you know, kind of the video game as well. So kind of multiplicity is an important motif throughout the film, like multiplies, like zombies multiply. And then that kind of visual motif was set up in the beginning. And so when Seo-gu, the protagonist, opens up his closet, we see all sets of the same suit.
Yeah.
And so either costume and clothing or, you know, gift to his daughter, and it's kind of multiplying of objects. Characters become zombies, it's kind of multiplying zombies in a way. And so I think that kind of visual motif reinforces the idea of like, we become zombies.
Well, you get two Nintendo Wiis at the start
well.
I mean, I've not seen that in a film before. There's the video game influence writ large.
Yeah.
There is, I think, in the same way like the Fast and Furious films kind of trade on the international language of car chases. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this is part of the international appeal. There is a kind of international universal language of a really good zombie movie. And it's not ashamed in the slightest at leaning into that at all. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I wasn't a huge fan of zombies, but then since the release of this one, I've seen quite a few zombie films. But I guess zombie films has been quite political, even from the 60s in the US context, and the kind of what the other represents.
Yeah.
But I think there's a shift. I think when I kind of talk about Train to Busan, we make jokes about we are zombies. It's not zombies or them, right? And so, like, we become part of that. And, you know, that kind of ambiguity of like, you know, alive but not alive, that kind of ambiguity of zombie status is, I think, always fascinating as a horror trope.
And you mentioned video games before. I mean, we're reading now quite a lot about films that are using computer graphics technology for video games to give us the visuals, like Star Wars TV shows. And I didn't realize Train to Busan had been an early forerunner of that. A lot of the stuff going in the background of the train is stuff that was generated using computer graphics technology
rather than
standard CG. Yeah, I mean, I go down nerd rabbit holes.
I'm not sure how much is done through post-production, but I think just the amount of like zombies like in one of the station, I think the Daejeon station is the one that they first stop, and all the soldiers like come in and they, you know, they're zombies.
It's the pace and energy of the first hour of it. The editing is razor tight for a start, but the number of times it just does a little rug pull and gives a jump just through its energy and through its pace, I just think it's extraordinary. Do you think there's a little bit of that, and what you were saying before, that animation background, that storyboarding, and just almost pulling as much oxygen out of it as possible in the early stages?
You know, possibly, but I think the fact that it's a fast train, that also adds a little bit of like energy to that. And I think unlike like more traditional zombie films, zombies are fast. I think so in terms of, I think, both narrative, but also in terms of movements, I think maybe that kind of pacing adds a lot more energy, I think, to the film.
The speed of zombies has divided fans of zombie films for a long time. I remember when Danny Boyle made 28 Days Later and people were angry at how fast the zombies were in it. And here, there just wasn't the anger. It's just like we were all just hiding a little bit. It was just the speed of them is extraordinary. The very fact that we're sat here talking about the film, what, 7 years after it first came out, is I wonder if it's in part testament to the fact that it did break out far beyond, right around the world. This became a success. In the UK, for instance, I read it's one of the highest grossing films of all time, not in the English language. Why do you think this one broke out? What was particularly pertinent about it?
But as you mentioned, there's kind of universal dimension to it. But I think the Korean culture in general has become more visible around that. I think all this kind of Korean music, Korean pop culture. So I think there's also that synergy there in the sense that especially younger audiences are exposed to Korean culture, Korean pop. And then this is kind of one of the commercial films, but not really necessarily like crime films that have been circulated for kind of niche market, say. Yeah. And this has become a little bit more kind of widely circulated rather than really kind of extreme Asian cinema with lots of violence. And so maybe that's one of the reasons. I'm trying to think what are the other films around that. And then like shortly after it's pandemic. And so I don't know whether pandemic also contributed to this kind of dissemination of the film through different platforms and such. But it was shown at Cannes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Regionally, I think the actor who played Seogu, the protagonist, Gong Yoo, he's hugely popular in East Asia through television.
Yeah.
And so he already has some fandom. And so like maybe like it's popular across, but for different reasons, I think. And so in Europe or in the UK, there's a little bit of like festival effect.
Yeah.
But then there's also this growing interest in Korean culture.
When I came to hear of it, I was told by someone, here's a zombie film where you're going to bawl your eyes out at the end. And true to form, I watched it straight away and was bawling my eyes out at the end. And it was far more, I just want to commend the fact that it's really quite surprising what it starts to pack in towards the end. In particular, how much is set up early on. I just wonder, how much of it did you see coming when you're watching it? Because this is a film that wrong-footed me quite a few times, first time I saw it.
I mean, I saw the film in Seoul. I mean, I think it was after the Cannes premiere, right?
Yeah.
I think. And so I saw it in the summer. Obviously, it's great summer season and then zombie films. I was really excited about the two stations, Daejeon Station is the first and then Daegu Station. And then I got a little bit like, okay, how is it going to end?
Yeah.
But I was very interested in those two elderly ladies.
Yes.
The kind of very minor supportive characters. But I find them fascinating and very important for the narrative, especially for the closure, because one of them becomes a zombie.
Yeah.
But then younger one opens up the door to let zombies in. That was shocking, I thought. Rather than like trying to escape and protect your like loved one, she's like disillusioned about this kind of like, oh, what's the, you know, value of the worth of our lives? And just, you know, she worked so hard that she just opens up the kind of door.
And they cut to carnage straight away, don't they? There's no emotional, once that door's open, there's no emotional reunion or anything like that. It's just, it's savage.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, that was a kind of shocking moment to me. And then there's a little bit of like love story between the teenage couple.
Did you see it in a packed house? Was it a busy screening?
It was one of the early, I think, screening. You know, it was kind of right at the moment when it was out. And then I teach Train to Busan on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So
how does this film go down with your students?
They like it.
Yeah. Are many of them seeing it for the first time when you introduce?
Some of them seen it before. Some of them, you know, for the first time. And they like it. I end the module with this film. And then I teach like a Japanese like monster film like Godzilla.
I'm going to your class.
So kind of like monster films back to back. But there is also this kind of self-sacrifice as an ending. And so it's good to compare because it also horror films or Godzilla films has historical context. And so, yes, it's commercially fun. But at the same time, somehow it can tease out a little bit more out of those two films.
You hinted before as well of just about the slice rebellious streak almost underpinning Train to Busan. I mean, the bit that always gets me is there's a newsreader in the midst of the outbreak who, with a completely straight face, tells you to stay calm and trust the government. And I just love the way that it's kind of juxtaposed that all around while that's going on, there is just stuff going down and it isn't pleasant. But it's got that streak to it, hasn't it?
Yeah, some scholars see it as a kind of disaster film.
Yeah. And it's got the ensemble feel of a disaster film.
Yeah, and then there's a kind of critique of the government's kind of lack of management within the fictional context. But I think there was a ferry kind of sank down a few years ago and students were told to stay in the cabin and the ship sank. And so there's an undercurrent there in the film as well.
Yong Sang-ho has revisited this universe twice as well with the film Seoul Station and with the film Peninsula as well. I've not watched these because I'm almost a bit scared because I really like Train to Busan enormously. What can you tell us about those two other films? Should we be worried going into them? Are they near the level of this?
I guess Seoul Station is prequel.
Yes.
And so it, you know, takes place around Seoul Station. I was slightly uneasy about gender there.
Yeah.
But Peninsula, people don't like it as much as Train to Busan, but I really liked it. There's a lot more presence of female characters.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of single mother and two young daughters. And it's almost Fast and Furious combined like zombie films.
And you should write poster quotes.
And so like the elder daughter, she knows how to drive. And so we see like close-up of her feet. And then there's a great scene where like zombies falling off of the kind of overbridge when they're driving by. And so the kind of urban scape is totally different. A lot more kind of pessimistic, a lot more futuristic atmosphere. It's not as real, quote unquote, real as Train to Busan.
Yeah.
But I really liked Peninsula.
Okay. I'm going to give it a go.
You get the truck, come back with the money.
That's $2.5 million per head. If you come back alive.
Train to Busan is part of what's also been called a South Korean renaissance in cinema. And if listeners enjoy it, what other films should they be seeking out?
I guess renaissance in the sense that there is a kind of a very strong commercial industry.
Yeah, I think
whatever Korean films are exposed to, that can be a good entryway and then explore further. It's like zombie films and you can watch Peninsula. If it's like films like, you know, The Host, then they can look into other films directed by Bong, like Mother. Or there's also very interesting independent cinema, women directors as well. Chulai Chung, she directed A Girl at My Door, and that has been released in the UK. Iok Sup, she has directed a film called Maggie, and that was out a few years ago, and that's quite Wes Anderson-ish, quirky kind of film, but I really like that film a lot. It's more indie scenes that like Korean women directors have been very active in the past decade or so. And those films are shown at the festival. Some films are shown on like, you know, Channel 4. And so, yes, commercial film is one way to kind of be exposed to Korean cinema. But then the more you kind of watch, the more things to explore, I think. So I watch everything. That's my philosophy.
So amongst your recommendations there, you mentioned the name Bong, one familiar to many film lovers around the world, Bong Joon-ho. And so there are a couple of films you touched on.
Yes, I think like his film, crime film, like Mother,
yeah,
has been released by Studio Canal.
Yeah.
Mother is a kind of revisionist crime film. The mother is trying to solve the, she believes that her mentally challenged son is wrongly accused for a murder in a small town. And she's investigating it herself because, again, like in many film, Korean films, government or police are not trustworthy. And so she herself tried to prove the innocence of her son. And then it turns out unexpectedly, and I'm not going to spoil. So like it's a kind of investigation film, but the actress Kim Hye-ja, who played the mother, is very famous Korean television actress.
Yeah.
Like Bong's other films, like Memories of Murder, it's also kind of crime films, but it's a kind of like you think the film is about like crime, but crime is not the main story, so to speak, I think. And so Mother is interesting in that regard. And similar to Memories of Murder, there is a kind of cyclicality. Like, so we see the mother dancing in the opening sequence.
Yeah.
And then we see her dancing again in the same place. And then we revisit what we saw in the beginning. So that's, you know, the meaning of that. Memories of Murder is kind of similar. I think the protagonist, I think Detective Park arrives in this kind of very bucolic kind of rice paddy field. And then he comes back a few years later. And so this kind of like, I think, space and kind of scenery or, you know, action or performance take up different meanings after you watch the film. And so, I mean, some of the motifs that you talked about in Train to Busan, some of the kind of clues or cues in the beginning that we pick up, and then they take up different meaning. And I think Bong plays with similar aesthetic strategy where it's kind of cyclical, but then you kind of think about, you know, what it meant. And then other Korean films, like I Saw a Devil, that's not directed by Bong, but it's directed by Kim Ji-un, and he's an important director as well. And so there are some other Korean titles available through Studio Canal. I Saw a Devil, we talked about how Train to Busan had a little bit more universal appeal to the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so like some of the East Asian cinema has been known for its extreme violence. I can also see the continuity even to Squid Game in terms of extreme violence. And so I think the change of platforms actually played quite a bit of role to have those kind of the extreme films more widely circulated.
Yeah.
And I Saw a Devil as a continuation of that aesthetic trend, I think.
Now, I've read a description of this. The description says, it's a visceral thriller essentially driven by both lead characters trying to inflict as much pain and terror in one another as possible. Is that a fair reflection of the film?
Yes, I believe so. But if you want to see another film by the same director, A Bittersweet Life, it's less visceral, but it's kind of like Korean gangster noir films, which I really enjoyed. I think that's like 2005. It's earlier than I Saw Devil.
Yeah.
So that's a good film.
Does that have two lead characters trying to inflict as much pain and terror on one another as possible?
There are more than two characters, but more or less.
Even better.
But more or less. And there is a kind of like very extravagant gunfight.
You are the teacher of the most violent film class in the whole country, I've decided.
No, well, when I teach that, I teach A Bittersweet Life, and then I tell students that this is the most violent film that you're going to see this module. And then they sigh. They want to see more of that kind of. And so I try to balance things.
Dr. Jin-Hee Choi, you have expanded my viewing list by a country mile. Thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Train to Busan, Seoul Station, Peninsula, Mother, and I Saw the Devil, they're all available on the Studio Canal Presents channels on ITVX Premium, Apple TV, and Prime Video. We just got time for some news of what's been happening in the world of Studio Canal. Firstly, some news on Ken Loach's eagerly awaited movie, The Old Oak, which has just played at the Cannes Film Festival. The film, which may well be Loach's final feature as director, and he's hinted as much, will cap a career of over 50 years with some style. I can now confirm too, it will be in UK cinemas on September the 29th. Benedict Cumberbatch, meanwhile, is to take the lead in How to Stop Time, based on the novel of the same name by Matt Haig. DC Moore is penning the script, and Thomas Alfredson, who previously helmed the wonderful Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, will direct the adaptation, which is set to become a TV series. Exciting casting news has been confirmed for Paddington in Peru. Ben Whishaw is returning as the voice of Paddington, and further returnees are Hugh Bonneville, Julie Walters, Jim Broadbent, Madeline Harris, Samuel Joslin, and Imelda Staunton. New additions this time: Olivia Colman is to play a guitar-playing nun called the Reverend Mother. Antonio Banderas is on board, captaining a riverboat. Rachel Ziegler is set to play his daughter, and Emily Mortimer will be taking on the role of Mrs. Brown. Filming begins at the end of July. Exciting news too that filmmaker Mike Lee has begun his latest film with work underway in London. As always with Mike Lee Pictures, not too much is being revealed ahead of release. We do know that the story will be exploring family relationships in the shadow of the pandemic, and Studio Canal will be releasing it in the UK. Finally, a couple of things to watch from the comfort of your armchair. If you missed out on Evil Dead Rise, although it's still playing in a few cinemas, the film is now available to watch at home. You can rent it via major video on demand services now. Available now, Jean-Luc Godard's Le Mépris has a full restoration and a fresh physical media release for its 60th birthday. It joins Studio Canal's Vintage World Cinema collection on DVD, Blu-ray and 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray. That's it for this episode of Studio Canal Presents. We'll be back next time for a very special celebration of LGBTQ+ cinema. To find out more about Studio Canal films and the ITVX, Apple TV and Prime Video channels, you can visit www.studiocanal.co.uk or follow Studio Canal at Studio Canal UK on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. And if you'd like to catch up on our previous episodes on everything from Terminator 2 and The Driver through to The Railway Children and The Third Man, you can find them wherever you get your podcasts. Now though, I'm off to cancel my train ticket and get the bus instead. Might just be safer in the long run. Ta-ta for now.